You're listening to WALT.
Homegrown.
Homemade radio.
Live from New York, it's Saturday night.
Is that what you want to say? It is Saturday night. It is Saturday. New York, technically, so.
Yeah.
Do we want to start?
Let's begin.
I guess we've already kind of started.
All right.
Oh my God. Hey, guys.
Welcome to Fisher Family Ghosts. I'm Sam Dingman.
I'm Adrian Bain.
Adrian, would you like to tell people where we are?
Oh my God, we are in a funeral home. And it's not like we sought it out because we're so committed to our podcast, but coincidentally, my mom's fiancé.
Congratulations, by the way.
Guys.
Thank you.
I think I talked about it a few episodes ago of being like, my mom just got engaged and I have a lot of feelings. But we are in a funeral home right now, and Peter, my mom's fiancé, has transformed the, what room are we in?
We're in the chapel.
He has transformed the chapel into a private movie showing screen. So we can all watch 6 feet under, big screen. 60 inch screen.
72.
That we're, you know, projecting onto the wall of the chapel.
Yes. Peter, would you like to tell people what normally happens in this room when it's not being used as a 6 feet under movie theater?
Well, this is where we meet as far as a family and friends and relatives to have services for the deceased. So it makes it a special place to meet.
And can you tell us a little bit about, this is not just any old funeral home. This has been in your family for how long?
Since 1954.
Oh my God.
Dad started this in 1954. I took over January of 1984.
Do you know what prompted him to want to start
a
funeral home?
Well, when he got out of World War II, he really love of animals. He wanted to become a veterinarian, so the story goes. But there was all the veterinarian schools were filled. So the next best thing, because he lived in such a small community and raised in a small community, that thought that funeral directing might be the way to go.
Whoa!
So he became a funeral director.
And how did you come to be the proprietor of it?
Well, having lived here upstairs all my life with four siblings and two adults, parents, that I was the one and only that chose to stay with it after about 10th grade in high school.
And was that because you expressed like a particular interest in it, or?
Well, correct. Yes.
I think that's really interesting that your dad went from being in the war. Right?
World War II. Where was he? Normandy Beach invasion.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, and I remember you saying that he didn't really talk about that.
That's right.
Right? Which, that's really sad. Too bad we didn't have mics back then. But I think that's really interesting that he was like kind of surrounded by so much death at that point.
Oh yeah.
You know? Yeah. And like, do you feel like as a kid, you were pretty desensitized to around the idea of death? Like,
born and raised in it, you become normalized. Right. This is the norm for me.
Was there like a specific moment when you and your dad had a conversation where you said, I want to do this, and he said, one day this will all be yours, or something like that?
With my dad, as any World War II veteran, you have to work for what you get and want.
So you had to kind of prove yourself?
Dramatically.
Hmm.
What did you have to do to prove yourself?
Well, definitely show interest and be committed, because it is a 24/7 business.
Yeah.
You have to be on call 24/7, and that just means even though you're young, you have requirements to show up when you're called upon.
Right.
Yeah.
But I started in the business probably when I was about 14.
14?
Yeah.
What were things that you would do when you were 14?
Stand door, help with removals of the deceased, be at a home or an institution. Of course, other non-funeral things, but involved with it, washing cars, mowing lawns, taking care of the facilities, because it's an 1880s Victorian, so there's always something to do around here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get into the
helped
out embalming, but helped out, witnessed it.
When was the first time you did it?
I was doing it.
When was the first time you did it by yourself?
What?
When you embalmed a body by yourself.
Oh, God, I don't remember my name.
Wait, is the reason that you don't want to get into it because you weren't supposed to be doing the
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, there's legal things involved in this whole thing. Sure.
Fair enough. We won't say the name of the funeral home.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Let's all take a moment to list every legal thing each of us have ever done.
We will
there's
be
one
here
or two
for...
illegal things, but look at the list of legal things that I've done. So, Peter, is there anyone else other than the living in this building with us right now? Are you in the press? Do you have a body right now? Like, is there anyone hanging out in the other
room?
Yes,
of course there's one hanging around with us right now. Well, they're not hanging, but...
No, they're not. Cool, there's a body in the other room.
In the other room, respectfully covered, et cetera, yeah.
So, who else is here is my family, part of my family. So, my youngest sister, Jessica, a.k.a. Claire... And my mom, who is like the antithesis of Ruth. I'm comparing you guys.
Ruth is my middle name, though. Can we swap?
Do you want to swap with... I don't think you're going to like this, Ruth, though.
Wait.
I don't know.
Jess's middle name is Ruth.
I want to go to Syracuse.
And Regina is considering Claire as a name.
I need math quantities.
Oh, my God. Let's apply way more meaning to this than is actually necessary.
That's my job.
I know.
So, Peter, you have seen 6 Feet Under before.
Oh, yes.
Can you say, when you watched it, did you... I mean, obviously, we're about to watch an episode, so it'll probably refresh your memory. But what's your memory of... Did you find it to be an accurate depiction of
It started out really pretty accurate. But to me, it just turned into more drama than it did actually focusing on the actual business part of it, mm-hmm. which is okay, too, because you can just handle so much
right.
death. But as I understand, I remember that every scene opened up with somebody passing.
Yes.
In some sort of circumstance, which was either, you know, naturally or tragically, accidentally or whatever. So, and that's truly what happens, correct. Mm-hmm. So by day, it's very fascinating what might, you know, what happens. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other than that, the drama part of it. Well, that can happen, I guess, in anybody's life. But.
Yes.
I guess you're specifically, as somebody who runs a funeral home, trying to avoid the drama part of it.
Well, you have to.
Yeah.
So your dad died, huh? What was that like? I don't know. Doesn't seem real. I never knew anybody that died. Well, I grew up in a funeral home, so I was always around it. Okay, was that like completely weird? Yes.
Jess, you get the first question. I want to know what it was like to watch the 8th episode of the first season of this show with zero frame of reference. Yeah. Like, in if you had to summarize what this show is about,
you've never watched it?
Based on what you just saw, what would you say?
No. I mean, it's just about a family, like every other show.
I don't know. Yeah, that's probably
true. You know, it's just another show about a family, different setting.
That's actually interesting that it came across.
That's so much simpler
that
than
way. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Simple-minded woman.
That is so far from the truth.
Simple-minded showrunners, maybe.
Yeah, but yeah. I feel like they do take such a simple premise, and they do add like a lot of layers.
Yeah, you go person by person in the whole family, and that's how the episode rotates the entire time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that is a pretty common story structure.
But this is my favorite show.
But I guess, was there anything in particular that you found?
What? I don't like starting things in the middle, so...
Oh, great. I'm glad we brought you on.
You're lucky that you even got me to do this in the first place.
Okay. I choose to interpret that as a testament to... I don't know, something.
I don't know. It was fun. I like talking about death.
Death. Death is lurking in the background. So
yes. Could be a tagline for the show.
I know. You should have had me on as a copywriter. I would have been great at 11.
Okay, Peter, I have a question for you. At the beginning of the show, they say... It's been 9 days since they got a body. And they're like, ugh, what's the longest we ever went without getting a body? So I'm curious to know, for you, what's the longest you've ever gone without
getting a body? Are you allowed to say that?
Getting a body.
No, it's gone quite an extended period of time. Because death has no time.
Yeah.
True. Longer than 9 days? Can you say that?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a weird headspace to be in, to like hope for people to die so that business picks up?
Now, come on, really? You're putting the funeral director on the spot.
Yes, admittedly.
Just, it's not like Peter's just like sitting in the chapel waiting.
Yeah, right.
You know,
like, or I'm waiting and I'll answer the phone on the first ring. Right, no.
Yeah. Have you ever decided to host a senior dance?
How interesting.
Event.
Well, not necessarily a dance, but some other use for the funeral home, yeah.
Let's do hot yoga in this room.
Makes you really focus. Especially after a body's been in.
Uh-huh.
Gross.
Take it in.
I felt like in the beginning, this one in particular focused on the funeral home business aspect. Did you have to take that test?
Yes, of course.
So what's on that test?
Well, in New York State, you have to do 2 years of education in mortuary science. Then when you're done with that, you have to take a national board test.
Uh-huh.
And then following that, you have to do a year's residency at a funeral home before you actually get your funeral director's license in New York State. Obviously, the typical things is anatomy and physiology, not necessarily physiology, but biology, psychology.
Like bedside manner.
Well, in retrospect, the people handling grief. Yeah.
I think it's coffin side manner.
And right, ironic enough, is a history of funeral directing.
Did you find, like, when you took the test and started working, that, because you already had so much real world experience, right?
I mean, that's 99% of this business is being part of it, and
yeah, I mean, what did they have to teach you in these training
programs? Well, the basics, like they actually teach you embalming, because you have to literally do embalmings at the school. Of course, me knowing ahead of time a lot about it gave me certainly a...
This is your way of telling us you were the teacher's pet.
Ironically, yes, only because I was actually going to college before I even went to college. Oh. I was, during the summer before I started, I was I was asked to, if I wanted to, come in and do summer embalmings before school started. Mm-hmm. So I helped the teacher do embalmings before school started, which I got all my embalmings requirements before I even started school. But I still continually did embalmings during school only to show the students that I was not a teacher pet.
Oh, my God. So had you gleaned a little bit off of your... Dad?
Well, it's always nice to have a good teacher.
So you were even when you were doing the summer program, did you still feel like you were a little bit of a head of the game? Because you had this actual...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. She was quite impressed on what I knew.
Interesting. Uh-huh. So in this episode, Rico does a full face
reconstructive.
Have you done anything
not to
like
that?
Not
to that extent. Sometimes it just turns into where it's like, there's just way too much time involved in that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They kind of downplayed that. That would have taken many, 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 many hours to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like he couldn't really.
They put him on to watch and be done by the end of the day. That's no possible way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No possible way.
Right.
Interesting.
So I felt like the...
Anatomy, yes.
The main theme in this episode, to my mind, was loyalty and what it means to be loyal.
Sam and I have kind of noticed that with that first clip, like the person who dies, whatever happens tends to be kind of the theme for the rest of the show. So what happens to this woman is she gets her face slammed in. So it's like everything you thought you knew, you actually don't know. And I feel like that came up a lot in that, like, Rico left them. He was a very dedicated, loyal employee. Their face got the Fisher sons, their faces got smashed in.
Well, also, you could even be more literal. She, Chloe, ends up being literally two-faced. And Rico is...
Yeah.
And Brenda are both... openly lying to the people who they supposedly are loyal to.
Yeah, that's good. And I think also everybody in Claire's world is too. You know, like people are not what they seem.
Right.
Ooh,
the
two-faced, that's great.
Stanford pot smoker guy
who
she thinks is her friend. And then it turns out that her friend from high school puts on a face of being kind of a goody two-shoes, but she's actually...
Just like her, yeah.
Yeah.
And Claire is like perceived as being this a like real, goth artsy right, whatever. Exactly. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm just like kind of a weirdo.
Yeah. So here's my question to that end. And this is literally just opinion. Do we think that Brenda and Connor actually had a thing, or were they really just friends?
I think there's just a history.
I think there's
maybe
a history.
Maybe not in the visit, but...
Right. There's a level of comfort there where it's like, to take
that,
whoa.
To take that, yeah.
Was the photo of the two of them?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was a little hard
boning
to see.
Boning in the photo? That's what I thought they were doing.
That's, I
thought they were naked
confused.
Boning on the beach in the photo.
It is,
but it was hazy.
It is a little... It wasn't like...
It is a picture that is evocative of boning.
Excellent.
It's a bone-vocative photo.
Bone-vocative. That's a new one.
Do I think that they...
Sounds like the Wangster Dictionary.
Brenda and Nate have had a really weird back and forth.
Of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Brenda kind of sucks. High key.
Thank you.
It's painfully evident the minute that she steps on screen that she sucks.
Wait,
what is your perception of her? This has been a huge dynamic on the show so far, is Adrian, just like from the instant Brenda appears, was like, I do not like this person.
Yeah, you would also think that on the phone call she would be like, there's a naked Australian in my house, FYI.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Who
right.
broke in. And, like, I don't know.
Do you think that Brenda was kind of sussing out if there was anything with this Aussie guy? And then she was like, no, there isn't. Like, do you think she was kind of using him as an escape?
I think what happened
making
is...
Making him jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think she had something in the past, as you guys were saying, with this Connor character, and because her sense of intimacy with Nate was even vaguely threatened, that happened in the previous episode.
Okay.
She decided that she would get back together with him because obviously it can never work out with Nate, and she should just give up on it.
Jess, did you connect with the Claire character at all?
I like her vibe. If I met her in, like, at college, I'd be like, interesting.
Mm.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you?
Tell me more about you.
Yeah. I would go hiking with her.
Cool.
Yeah.
And just, like, gripe about stuff the whole time?
Absolutely.
What about all the politics between the funeral homes? Kroner and the Fishers.
He offered Rico a funeral home to run. Basically.
Oh, is that what he offered him?
Oh, so he was saying you could run your own funeral home.
Well.
Oh, he said he was setting. No, that makes
sense. Because they have so many.
Right.
Oh, that's what they do, is stick funeral directors in particular homes.
He said that he was
going
to give him, like, a home to live in.
That's what I thought.
No, no.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what
both of you thought?
Well, because she was.
That's what I thought, too, admittedly.
The wife was saying she wanted to live in a house, not an apartment.
Right.
Well, because when you run a funeral home, you're able to get a little more money to offer to live in a home rather than an apartment.
So I thought it was
rather than just being a hired embalmer.
So would they have given Rico kind of the same setup as this of, like,
right.
You live up
probably,
top and
that's
then...
That's right, correct.
Huh.
More than likely, yep.
Interesting.
Wow.
Wow, I didn't realize how much they were giving him.
See, Peter, this is why it's good to watch the show with somebody who actually knows a single thing about
the
business.
We should just erase the previous 7 episodes that we've done, because now we just really
don't. And Rico should have been taking that job, yes.
So you think Rico should have...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Jumped on that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But I think you'll see in future episodes...
Yes, the Rico story is
not
complete.
Did you watch all of it, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
In that vein, another thing about this episode is that all of a sudden, David and Nate are, like, friends.
Who is David?
David is the
gay Well, they're starting to find
gay
their places
middle brother.
In life.
He's the one who looks like Marco
and
Rubio.
And to get along.
Right?
I'm sorry, what'd you,
I'm not wrong, though, right? I was thinking it the whole time. The whole time.
I didn't hear
She
that.
Said, David?
Yeah.
David.
Is the one that looks like Marco Rubio.
Oh, yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely
That's really
right.
funny.
Wait, he really does look like Marco Rubio.
Yes, he does.
I couldn't get it out of my eyes every time he was on the screen.
Let's stay with the Rico thing, because this also is the first episode in the series so far where you actually learn a lot. It goes into Rico as a person, mm-hmm. more than Rico has been like an accessory to the plot up to this point.
But yeah, okay.
And in this one,
well, they're showing that he has more responsibility because his wife is pregnant, et cetera. And
yeah.
So he's using that as an excuse to kind of like now, oh, wow, I got to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit or get off the pot type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. And so. We get to see the wife a lot more.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. She's like pushing him to say, you know, we need to step it up too. You do such fine work, obviously, that,
yeah.
you know, you need to move on.
Something I liked about that is the scene at the funeral of, or the viewing of Chloe, where they're standing in front of the casket, just very openly talking about what a great job Rico right. did with no regard for her life, which is something that throughout the series, when you see Rico, he's always mostly just proud of his restorative work and doesn't seem to have a whole lot invested in like the humanity of the person who he did the work
yeah,
for.
Yeah, right. He's that, you know, ghoul part of it, like, you know, the one that stays in the basement doing the nasties, you know, the nasty part of it, the mechanicals. Yeah. And, you know, there's other parts, though, obviously, to the business where, right. but some are better at things than others, you know, like anything.
Would you say that personality trait is true of embalmers you have met, that they are a little more focused on the craft than they are the person they're doing the craft on?
The preparation of the body is very important, and the person doing it, you can tell that they're very well at what they do. And to take stock on who you're actually working on and why and all that has a lot to do with it. And the reason, you know, why they died, et cetera. When you have a person who dies tragically like Chloe did, then absolutely, you're putting your heart and your soul into it because you want to make sure that that family will be able to, you know, grieve.
Hmm. So what about that part at the end where David / Marco Rubio?
I honestly forgot that his name was David already.
What about that part, though, where he's excited that there's been this bus accident?
That's so a weird. Little extreme, right?
Okay,
I mean,
okay.
You know,
that's good to hear.
Well, that's what people perceive when we do get business. It's like, oh, you bet, glad your phone rang, you know? And it's like, oh, yeah, there was an airplane accident, you know? And, you know, it's just, I'm sorry, but
yeah,
that's how public really, you know, perceives us. You know,
can I ask a funeral question? And this is just like my own curiosity. Okay. Is like, why do we do open casket?
Because it makes the people realize that death has occurred. Oh. There's 5 stages to death, as you know. Okay. And one is the realization that it happened. And if you don't actually, sometimes for families that don't get to view their body, don't necessarily acknowledge that the person has died. So they skip a couple steps in the grieving process, which can, for some, make it difficult because everybody handles death differently. Mm-hmm. And others don't need to see a body, but others should and do. So hence why we do that.
Something I did think we got to see in this episode is David says to him, Marco says to him,
okay.
sorry, that might have been confusing for a moment. I don't always want to be bad cop. And Nate interprets that as, I won't just be a cop, I'll be like a full-blown detective. Like he calls Federico's house because he suspects that he's taking the embalming fluid from the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And he really like cracks the case pretty fast.
Yeah.
But then we still see like,
well, that's where David's oblivious to all what's going on.
Yeah.
So where Nate is more into the detail, Nate's more into the detail part.
Yeah.
Really, what's going on with you, Nico? You know, you're not just a hired hand coming. I want to understand why you're here. And
right. Exactly.
And it's awesome.
Why was he even stealing embalming?
Because he was taking it to the other place to work on another body.
But I don't understand why.
Do they not have stuff?
Well, exactly.
Funeral directors, or embalmers especially, have their own way of doing things.
Oh.
And typical that they're used to working with, chemicals or cosmetics, et cetera, et cetera. Huh. So in order to have that, they go with what they know works. So they grab what they know works.
I took that as like a painter would want his own paints, right?
Correct, absolutely. They're Got artists. It. Absolutely, they're artists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Another question I have about that is there's, I think, a really interesting part in the scene where Claire's driving back with her friend, and she says, her new friend says, "Your dad died. What was that like?" Amazing dialogue. That was not the best written line.
Yeah,
but
a legitimate
question for a young person who's never been subjected to death.
True.
So she's asking because she's firsthand.
That's true.
You know, other than living in a funeral home, now she's witnessed the death of her own family member, which is very important.
Well, so this is the question I wanted to ask, is Claire gives this really interesting answer where she says the death of her father doesn't seem real, even though she grew up around death.
Correct. So she's saying, I'm normal. Mm-hmm. Even though I live in a funeral home, I'm not yet accepted my dad's death. Basically, which is part of grieving. So she's going through the stages of grieving.
That's really interesting, Peter. I asked this question because I wanted it to be something about like, well, when you grow up in a funeral home environment, death becomes one, like, this surreal thing to you, but you're a death in your own family is very difficult to process.
We're still human beings.
That's what
we're
I
ghouls.
As you gave that answer, I realized I was asking you, like, are you some kind of weirdo?
Well, thank you. Yeah. Most people say I am.
I wish I was a ghoul.
Oh, no, you don't.
I don't know. Once
on some scary old miner town in the West. There's an old coal mine.
I don't know. Just
a few dead canary bones.
You once told me that someone asked you what Disney princess you related to, and you're like, I related most to Shrek.
I mean, yeah.
And this is why Adrian wanted to ask you if you resonated with Claire's
character. Yeah, I know. Because I think, honestly, I like analyze the siblings the most, and I think that they're such well-written, like, eldest, middle, youngest. I'm not going off on a tangent, Peter. This is all part of it.
Drama, yes.
But I think that Claire, one of the things that stood out to me was, like, I felt like Claire was so well-written as a youngest sibling. Mm-hmm. And that she has this, like,
I literally want to go in the woods right now
and
go in a hike.
Yeah. But, like, and way older siblings way and, older. Like, she doesn't know what she wants just yet, but she just has so much more street knowledge because she's been around older siblings. And I really resonate with Nate because Nate is like, I'm just going to go live somewhere else and, like, see what happens. Like, you're
I literally love bullying you.
You're just, like, as the oldest, you're just constantly the old, like, this guinea pig of, like, what is happening? And the youngest one is so much more like, I don't know what I want yet, but I know I don't want any of this.
I feel like I've always known what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Do you think that's because you had two older sisters and you got to see kind of, like, whether or not you were aware of it, you kind of got to see, like, okay, don't do that.
Well, I did neither, if you like. Of what your Regina did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all
did. I'm still figuring it out because it's postponed because of the coronavirus, so I don't even know.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a weird time to ask you this question.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you
five
just
seem... 5 semesters in, 3 left to go.
Yeah.
Don't know when I'm going to finish it.
But I just... And I mean, like, this is a question that will never fully be answered, but, like, is, like, how much are we influenced by our own siblings?
Yeah, I guess there's no way for Jess to answer the question, like... yes, I consciously have decided that I am 62% Adrian.
But it's also like you and Regina moved out when I was like 12.
Yeah.
So there's a big chunk of time where I've just been, you know, sitting by myself. No, so it's like, what was I to be influenced by? Adrian is in some country that I don't really know exists. And then Regina's, I don't know, with cows somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm just, like, doing math at school. So.
All right, let me see if there's anything else. Oh, we did finally get an answer to who set the fire.
Why would they do that?
Well, I was a little confused about that, too. I don't understand.
So the competitor bought a home on the corner, the same corner as the Fisher funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
With probably the intention of running a funeral home to compete. And then they decided not to, so they burned the place?
It was an older building.
That's fine. They're all older. Look at this. I'm not going to burn it down.
Is it just for insurance money?
Not necessarily, but because they're such a large conglomerate funeral home, like large volume, mm-hmm. that I think they finally realized, maybe, or just quickly realized that, you know, the Fishers are going to give them a run for the money, and it wasn't worth setting up shop there.
Yeah.
So instead of just because they know the building's only good for a funeral home, who's going to buy it otherwise?
Right. I mean, it was weird. Like, I didn't buy the explanation of the show in that moment. Like, I like the idea that Brenda or Claire set the fire much more than the idea that Kroner.
I wish Claire burned it down.
Yeah, me too.
Well, there's this weird moment at the end of that episode where the Kroner funeral home is on fire, and Nate looks back at Claire, and it's the same episode where she stole the foot, and you see Claire kind of go, like, squint suggestively at Nate. And the implication is,
I did this.
Yeah.
She's too busy sucking toes.
TBST. Hashtag. TBST.
That's going to be my sign-off for every email I write professionally. What? Too busy sucking toes. TBST. Just on the record, I don't have a foot fetish.
This is a judgment-free space.
Okay, but I am not a foot person.
Okay. Loud and clear.
You just want to sell pictures of your feet.
Yeah, make money off of it, obviously.
Wait, Jess, you can do that, though.
I know. I've been telling Mom for weeks, and she's like... She keeps looking at me.
Why'd you
weird.
Pick your foot? Why not your hand? Why not your head? Why your
ears? Weirdos want to look at your feet.
You got what?
Pay you money for it.
Quentin Tarantino will pay you a lot of money to take photos of your feet.
For heaven's sake.
Does anyone have his phone number? Do you guys have any contact?
Actually, we're probably three steps away from Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin Tarantino, if you're listening.
Quentin, I'm almost 21. I'm 5'8", blonde, blue-eyed. I've got size 10 women's shoes.
Actually, you being a size 10 is probably like...
Exactly. It's a niche. I'm not average.
You should get an OnlyFans for just your feet.
I do have a little bit of eczema on my feet, though. So. And my toenails are all fucked up because my duck bit it once.
What? A tale as old as time.
Quinn, again, the email is...
Once again, if that story did anything for you, FFG and...
Sidebar.
WALT.FM. It's amazing how we've slowly turned into Jessica's feet only fans page.
Honestly,
my sister's going through college and is really needs money.
I have $30 left in my bank account. I'm trying my hardest.
I don't think we're going to top that for an ending for the episode.
I don't think so either. I kind of love that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I hope this is your highest rated episode.
Well, this has been Fisher Family Ghosts. As we said, FFG at WALT-FM, if you are interested in any of the things we've talked about on the episode.
Telling us how the episode was, telling us how to get in contact with my youngest sister.
She's dead
20.
Serious.
Still, just has, she's 20. Over 18, but not 21.
Quentin, please.
Peter, do you any last words that you want to share with the good people in Fisher Family Ghosts Nation?
Just... Have fun watching.
That
Very
is
nice.
That is a beautiful sign off.